is Thomas Consolidated versus Jürgen Herbst. And at the request of the parties, argument has been vacated, and the case was submitted on the briefs and the record. And now we will come to the seventh case of the day, which is Antonio Koch versus Dane Koch. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court. The issue in this case is whether Antonia Koch satisfied her burden.
You're Mr. Ashton, correct?
I am.
Yes.
The issue in this case is whether Antonia Koch satisfied her burden to establish that the children involved in this case, Charles and Annalena Koch, were habitual residents of Germany on May 7, 2005, the date on which their father, Dane Koch, returned them home to the United States. The district court concluded that Antonia did satisfy her burden. However, it did so only because it applied the wrong legal standard to the facts of this case. Although this court has yet to set forth the proper approach to determining habitual residence of a child, the courts of appeals of the 2nd, 3rd, 9th, and 11th circuits have all adopted similar standards based on the 9th circuit's decision in Moses versus Moses.
Now, under Moses, whatever the parents' intent, habitual residence cannot be acquired without physical presence. And that's at page 1080 of that case. In what sense was Annalena ever physically present in the United States prior to her removal from Germany? Can 11 days establish her habitual residence in the United States? That seems a very unusual result, especially if we're supposed to apply the ordinary meaning of those words.
Well, she was a habitual resident of the United States, having lived there for 11 days, because her parents were habitual residents of the United States at that time. And a child's habitual residence is their parents' habitual residence when they're first born.
Well, then, what does Moses mean when it says, whatever the parents' intent, habitual residence cannot be acquired without physical presence?
Well, I think there was physical presence in this case, and besides that 11-day period, she also returned to the United States with her mother for a 6-week period in the midst of the family stay in Germany in order to reinforce their ties with the United States.
Well, let's assume for a moment that Dane and Antonia always intended that one day they would live in Ireland, and they were going to Germany to save enough money to move to Ireland. Why? Well, is Ireland the habitual residence of the children in that scenario? And why or why not? And how would this be any different? In other words, Angelina essentially never lived in the United States. Annalena, rather, never really essentially lived in the United States. So how can we say that the United States was ever her habitual residence?
Because she had started living here, and then when she went to Germany, her parents always intended that she would return to the United States, and that was reinforced to the children while they were in Germany. The fact that they're going to be returning to the United States, they're only in Germany for a temporary period, and that they would be raised in the United States.
Well, let me ask you this. At what point, what if the Kochs had been working for 10 years and still had not saved enough money to make a down payment? Would you still say that the children were habitual residents of the United States?
No, at that point it's possible that the children would have been acclimatized to Germany, and so at that point the acclimatization may have been strong enough to overcome the parents' shared intent to have the habitual residency remain in the United States.
So 10 years is too long. So at what point would the children become habitual residents of Germany?
Well, when they had become so acclimatized to Germany that their return to the United States would cause them to suffer the types of harms that the convention seeks to prevent.
So in terms of number of years, you're not going to give me a figure?
I don't think you can put an exact figure on that.
I guess I'm having trouble with what sense it makes to find that Annalena was a habitual resident, even though she was here just 11 days.
It's because the parents intended to return to the United States, and one of the policies that the convention seeks to further is that child custody disputes should be resolved in the forum where the parents would expect that it would be resolved. And I think when parents intend to return to a country when they have an original habitual residence, they would expect that it's the courts of that country that determine what's in the best interest of the children.
Well, shouldn't determining where the child habitually resides focus primarily on the child rather than on the parent's subjective intent?
Well, when the children are young enough, when they're too young to have their own intent regarding their habitual residence, then the focus needs to be on the parent's intent. And it's not a subjective intent. It's intent can be determined objectively by, in this case, there is an undisputed intent to return to the United States.
Well,
both parents agreed to that.
Here, the parents had a subjective intention to return here at some time in the future. They agreed the time was tied to certain financial goals, and they disagree on how close they were to meeting those financial goals after 3 years in Germany. Now, the district court found that they were not close to meeting that goal, and that is a fact finding to which this court must defer. Clearly, at some point, their actions were better indicators of their intent on residence than their subjective agreement. And at the time that Dane removed the children, they had been living in Germany for 3 years and had no plans to return to the United States anytime soon. Then we have, Dane committing this criminal assault against Antonio, which I assume would have some consequences under German law.
Under German law, yes, but in the terms of the Hague Convention, determining habitual residence, that's not an issue that will determine the children's habitual residence.
No, I agree. I mean, I agree with that. But I'm afraid that to say these children were habitual residents of the United States just ignores reality.
Well, there are other cases besides this one where courts have found that living in a country for multiple years didn't result in a change of habitual residence. For instance, the Ruiz case from the 11th Circuit, the children were there for 3 years, but yet the court still found that the children were habitual residents of the United States. So courts are not the case law is such that that courts can't just say, well, they were here for a certain period of time, therefore they're habitual residents of that place. We need a standard to identify when the children have become habitual residents of a place and when they have not.
In addition to the fact that you have these children living almost their entire lives in Germany, most of the facts and the witnesses that are relevant to the custody dispute are in Germany. The mother is in Germany without the means to come to the United States for anything other than a very short stay, which is a condition caused by a criminal act of the father. And shouldn't that be enough to change, not the criminal act, but shouldn't that be enough to change habitual residence in Germany?
Well, no, because in this case, the parties always intended to return to the United States, and so they'd expect that a United States court would resolve their dispute. And so the court that should process the information about the children's best interest should be a court in the United States, because that's the court that's going to share the cultural and social values with which the parents identify.
Thank you. Ms. Grogan.
May it please the court, I'm Kathy Grogan. I represent the petitioner appellee Antonia Cook in this matter. Your Honor has correctly identified one of the primary issues in this case, which is what is the overall goal of the convention. Custody disputes should be determined where the most information is available regarding the child's life immediately prior to the time of removal. That's the point in time which we look to when we look at Hague Convention cases.
Tell me, does Antonio concede that until the attack in December 2004 that the parties agreed that Germany was only a temporary residence with the intention to settle in the United States. Does she concede that?
She concedes that they did, when they moved over to Germany, have an intent to be there for some temporary, indefinite, contingent period of time. The idea was that they would save up enough money to purchase a home and cars, and Your Honor would be correct in stating that at some point in time her intent to do that changed based on the circumstances of the marriage.
Has she filed criminal charges against him in Germany?
She has, Your Honor.
So would he be subject to arrest if he returned to Germany?
There is, my understanding is that there is a way, and this is just based on discussions with the German consulate. I can supplement if the court should require it, but my understanding from the German consulate is that there is a way for him to appear and be involved in those custody proceedings without being arrested.
Let me ask you this. Is the district court's focus on the duration of the child's stay problematic? For example, what if you had a minor who was attending a boarding school in another country for, let's say, 5 years? Does that mean that the child is presumptively a habitual resident of the new country, even if neither parent had that intent?
Once again, the intent of the convention is to look at all of the facts and circumstances surrounding each case. And a period of 5 years, if the parents maintained a home base in that home country and the child was always intended to return there and the parents had no disagreement about it at any time, I think that would be a closer question. And Moses does, the Ninth Circuit in Moses does sort of enumerate a continuum, and the cases that have followed it have also enumerated more on that sort of continuum between an intent to go somewhere for a specific delimited period of time versus an ambiguous, indefinite, contingent sort of duration that we have in this case, where it's a closer question, and therefore the district court is entitled to even more deference.
Well, do we need to reject Mose, or do you think then by that last comment that this case falls within an exception articulated in Moses?
I don't believe that this court needs to reject Moses. I know that the trial court had problems with Moses and was troubled by the level of importance that Moses placed on parental intent, but I don't believe that this court needs to reject Moses. I feel that under the standards set forth in Moses even, the children were habitual residents of Germany.
Well, if we determine that the Moses line of cases applies, what is her best evidence of objective facts that point unequivocally to a person's ordinary or habitual residence being in a particular case? In other words, what facts would point to the habitual residence of the children, the habitual residence of the children being Germany?
The primary facts, if you went under Moses, the issues would be whether or not the parties had an intent, or the nature of the party's intent, first of all. The question under Moses is, did the parties intend to abandon their residence in the home country? In this case, they left 99% of their personal belongings, or they took 99% of their personal belongings with them. They did not maintain any kind of residence here in the U.S. They essentially made a clean break. The children were enrolled in school in Germany. They stayed there continuously for 3 years. This isn't the type of case where it was nomadic, like a military family or something like that, where they were living in different places for different periods of time. They were in Germany continuously for 3 years. And so the fact that their intent initially was ambiguous and indefinite, combined with the duration of their stay, the sort of clean break that they made, shows that they intended to abandon their prior residence in the U.S., even though they, you know, at some point in time planned to come back to the U.S. if and when this money was saved. The money never was saved. And then on top of that, even if the court found that there was some sort of shared intent and that was controlling and that that should be relevant in this case, the issue becomes acclimatization. And the fact is these children were 3 years old and 5 years old, and to say that they had a home anywhere other than Germany when they had lived there for 3 years just simply is illogical. That answers the court's question. And in fact, there aren't
any... What's the status of the divorce action?
The divorce action in Germany is stayed pending the outcome of the proceedings regarding habitual residence. The undisputed facts really are that Charles Cook lived in Wisconsin for 2 years and then Germany for three prior to the removal. And Elena Cook lived in Wisconsin for only 11 days, as Your Honor pointed out, and Germany for her entire 3 years. Their residence in Germany for that period was continuous. Both of the children attended school. As I said earlier, they moved the vast majority of their belongings to Germany. They didn't maintain a residence or any bank accounts in the United States. It simply wouldn't make sense to say that their habitual residence was anywhere other than Germany.
The bank account in Germany that was being used to buy a home?
There is some dispute about that, Your Honor, in the record, and I can't point to what the district court's findings were on that, but he did open a bank account in Germany. Whether or not it was definitely used only for the purchase of a home or not, I think isn't necessarily dispositive. But he did have that bank account in Germany, as opposed to maintaining any kind of financial ties to the United States other than, I believe, one retirement account is mentioned. I also wanted to mention that in with respect to the Tenorio v. Ruiz case, which the appellant pointed out, involved a lengthier period of time. It was actually 2 years and 9 months that the family was in Mexico. There are a number of facts which make that case distinguishable from the present one, but I would note that the appellate court actually stated that the district court had to be accorded quite a bit of deference in that case, and the district court was the one that had made the finding regarding the habitual residence being the United States rather than Mexico, despite that lengthy stay. There are no other cases that I'm aware of that involve a stay of that length, and on the other hand, there are stays that are as short as 3 months, 4 months, 2 months. A more recent case, Silverman, involved a stay of 11 months where habitual residence was found because of the settled intent of the parties, the settled purpose of the parties to make that their habitual residence, and the fact that they abandoned their prior residence before the move. As the court also alluded to, habitual residence should be viewed in the context of its ordinary meaning, the place where the members of a family live and work and go to school and spend most of their time. And that's obviously that was Germany in this case. And with respect to the notion that the actions and the objective facts, such as the district court pointed out in this case, have to supplant subjective intent at some point in time, the district court focused on duration and geography, and that hasn't been articulated necessarily quite that way in other cases, but every case that is cited by both the petitioners and the respondents here does look at duration and does look at that as a primary factor. Partially because it correlates to all of the other types of things that are factors in looking at whether or not a child has become acclimatized, and the focus should be on the child, not necessarily on the parent's intent. And for all of those reasons, we'd ask that the district court's ruling be affirmed in this case.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Grogan. Mr. Ashton?
Just a couple of points, Your Honors. First, the Antonia argues that we should apply the ordinary meaning of habitual residence, but as the variety of cases show, when you get to periods that are less than 15 years or 10 years, it's difficult to it's without looking at parental intent and other objective factors, it's difficult to determine what the ordinary meaning of habitual residence is. Now, Moses offers an approach to focus the analysis on factors that will result in an identification of habitual residence on a consistent basis. Now, in this case, if the court applies Moses, then the district court's decision would have to be reversed because, first, the parents had an undisputed intent to return to the United States and remain in Germany only temporarily. Although the district court said that the parents were nowhere near making that approach, meeting that amount, that finding is clearly erroneous because in the record, the only evidence in the record on that was Dane testifying that the family had $7,500 saved up and they had a vehicle that they were going to sell, and as soon as they sold that, they would have their money to return home. So the parents did have a shared intent to return, and they were close to doing that.
But that was his view, not hers.
That was the only evidence in the record on the point. And also, regarding the savings plan, the district court made no findings on that either. I see my time has expired.
No, please finish your thoughts.
As Dane also testified about the savings plan, that was just a regular savings account. Now, it also had a feature where you could use it to take out money and make home renovations, but even Antonia testified at the hearing that the parties had no plans to purchase a home in Germany. So for these reasons, we would ask that the district court's decision be reversed and the case be remanded with instructions to deny the petition.
Thank you very much. Mr. Ashton and Ms. Grogan, were either of you appointed?
I took on the case pro bono.
Yes, pro bono. Yes.
You really do have the thanks of the court for,
among other people,
the noble job that both of you have done. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Fine. All right. The case will be taken under advisement, and we will be in recess until tomorrow morning. Thank you, and good day, everyone.